Our parsha is Parshat Pinchas. Chazal say we have mitzvot that are obligatory, everyone must do them, and then we have mitzvot which you can do them, but you don't have to do them. So everyone knew this tradition that if a person is going with a non-Jewish woman, then in the middle of the act, you can get up and kill the person, as Pinchas actually did. Guys, don't try this today. But in the days of Pinchas, in the days of Pinchas, the sages of Israel weren't sure that Pinchas was right. They said, maybe the Torah gives you license, but you don't have to do it. So why does Pinchas stand up and do it? So people were very upset at him. You had license to kill. Who said you had an obligation to kill? What'd you do it for? So here you have a person who stood up against all odds. He could have been killed by the Midianites. He could have been killed by the tribe of Shimon. And when he killed Zimri and Cusbi, that's when the plague stopped. Yet, he doesn't get positive feedback from the people of Israel. Chazal tell us that often in Jewish history, people who were good to us, people who did a lot of good to us, got the bad end of the deal from us. We, the Jewish people, very often have turned on people who were very good to us. Starting with Moshe Rabbeinu. Chur, right? What?
Gidon,
Yiftach. Throughout our history, we see the leaders of the Jewish people had to contend with people who were not so nice to them, and sometimes especially when they did what was most right, as is the case with Pinchas. They start mocking his grandfather, who was a convert, and Pinchas has to deal with it. Hashem says, Pinchas is the one that caused my wrath to cease, and it's thanks to him that more people weren't killed. And therefore give him my covenant of peace. Briti shalom. My covenant of peace, I protect him. Anyone who's starting up with him is starting up with me. So that's a tremendous gift. Chazal say that's why Pinchas lived for centuries. We find Pinchas throughout the period of Judges. Hashem said, it's my covenant of peace that will be with him. And here let's pause for a quick interjection. Pinchas was zealous, right? Pinchas stood up and fought for what was right. We see the same trait, though, backfired on him, because he fought for what was right when Yiftach was the leader, and Yiftach had said, the first thing to greet me after my war will be sacrificed before Hashem, and then Yiftach's daughter came out to greet him, and so Yiftach tells his daughter, I will fulfill my promise, I will slaughter you for God. And word got out that Yiftach, the leader of Israel, is going to slaughter his daughter. Word came all the way to Pinchas. What does Pinchas say?
That Yiftach should come to me.
He should come to me. I'm the rabbi. I'm the prophet. And he needs me. He should come to me. Yiftach says, I just led the Jewish people to victory. I'm the king. Let the prophet come to me. So Yiftach ends up killing his daughter. Yiftach pays the price that he dies a very painful death. And Pinchas pays the price that God leaves him. God doesn't give him prophecy anymore.
Also the kuna went from Bnei Elazar, which Pinchas was part of, to Bnei Itamar, and later on Bnei Eli. Right.
Okay.
Wait, I just thought that she was like locked away or something.
There is an opinion that says she was locked away, that he didn't actually slaughter her. Two opinions among our sages. Chazal say, according to one opinion, Pinchas became Elio. So Chazal tell us that Elio's end was the same end. That ultimately Hashem said to Elio, till when will you be zealous? Elio is saying the Jewish people have not kept their covenant, they've murdered the prophets, I'm the only one left, and now they want to kill me too. And God says, why are you always so zealous? Your job is to speak good about the Jewish people, not to be zealous. And that's why ultimately Elio is removed from his task. So this idea of being zealous is an important concept. It's very important to have people who say, I'm going to fight for what's right. We also have to know it's a double-edged sword. Yes?
Doesn't it say that he was too harif?
The Lashon of the Medrash is, Ad matay ata mekane. I don't know if the Lashon, he was too harif. Back to our parsha. Hashem gives him an eternal priesthood. Until then he was not a kohen, now he became a kohen. Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to maintain enmity for the Midianites. Saror. How so? Other nations, when you fight them, you don't destroy their trees. By them, you should destroy their trees. There should be this. There should be a hatred for them. Why? So Chazal say there are two types of enemies. There's an enemy that says, I'm going to fight you. Okay, that's a problematic enemy. Then there's an enemy that says, I'm going to destroy you spiritually. And that, Chazal say, is a worse enemy than the enemy that fights us. And that's why the Egyptians can marry into Israel. They were enemies, they killed us, but they could marry in. The Edomites could marry into Israel. Ammon and Moab, them too, they participated in trying to bring us down spiritually. They said, let our daughters seduce them. So then Hashem says, they can never marry into Israel. The Ammonites and Moabites. Gadol ha-mechtime et chaverom ilu horigo.
It was meant for the men only, no?
He who causes his friend to transgress is worse than he who causes him to die. This is a very important concept. He who causes his friend to transgress is worse than he who causes him to die. Yes.
So why is Amalek allowed to marry in? To,
where were they Mahdi?
I mean, throughout Jewish history, aren't they the ones that spiritually try to kill us, not just physically?
Where do you see that? In the story of Purim, they try to kill us.
But he knew there was, whatever, maybe that's Chassidut talking, but there was a malach from Lamala that he had to first
what about Allah?
Cut off the head and then...
You see that he was trying to physically kill us, and the same with Amalek in the Torah.
What about Aram? Arami Oved Avi.
So, where do you see that they tried to cause us to transgress?
We had Bilam was the one who gave the advice.
That's not the Aramean people. That's one person. Coming back to our parsha. Yes.
Why does Hashem let evil persons that talk about the Jewish nation become leaders because of that? Like,
I didn't follow. Again?
Like in Bilam, it says like he's the son of... It doesn't mention he's a king after a while in the parsha. And they say it's because he wasn't... Before
you
talk bad about Israel, that's how we got.
You're talking about Balak.
Yeah, and the same thing with Hitler, that he talked better of the Jews and he becomes, you know, the leader of Germany. You know, why does
remind me in our class on the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the Talmud will address it. Say there? Towards then, just stick around. We'll get there. Yes?
Did we then say that there was a gap of some time between Pinchas committing the act and then God giving him the room of peace for Am Yisrael to...
Why? Why would you say that?
Rav said that people thought maybe he did the wrong thing and that he wasn't actually obligated to this mitzvah.
So it sounds like it was pretty immediate, that right after he did it, they were ready to kill him. It sounds like they were ready to gang up on him. It sounds like from the Midrashim, it sounds like Hashem intervened right away. We have a counting of the Jewish people. In this counting, we are told about the famous daughter of Asher called Sarah. You guys heard of Sarah bas Asher?
Sarah
bas Asher. Okay, so who was Sarah bas Asher's father? So we don't know who Sarah bas Asher's father was. She's called the daughter of Asher. Right, but our tradition is that she wasn't his biological daughter. She was his wife's daughter from a different marriage. And his marriage to his wife was his second marriage. And from here we learn a halacha that when a person adopts a child, he should call him my son. And the adopted child should call his parent Abba and Ima. And even when a person gets called up to the Torah, it says in Chatam Sofer, another responsa, they should get called up to the Torah and use the name of the adoptive parent. As the Talmud tells us in Tractate Sanhedrin, that when a person raises someone else's child, it's as though they gave birth to them. So that's why we find this in Navi also, where Michal, the daughter of Shaul, brought up her sister's children, and they're named after her. So a person who brings up a child, it's as though they gave birth to them, and that's why Sarah is called the daughter of Asher, even though she wasn't his biological daughter. Yes?
What about a Kohen who adopts kids?
So they do not become Kohanim. It's a good question how they should do it, right? Menachem ben Uzziah Kohen. Shlishi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be problematic. Yes.
What about Gerim?
What about them?
Why they're called Ben Avraham instead of their father's name brought them up?
Right. I asked this question. I don't have an answer for it. I don't know. I don't know. It says in Shulchan Aruch that a ger who converts with his son is called Ben Avraham. So I said it shouldn't be any worse than this. Right? So sometimes we're lenient. There are gerim who get very embarrassed to be called. This comes up more. Many gerim today, their father's Jewish and their mother's not Jewish. And then they undergo conversion. And then the question is, how do they get called up to the Torah? So lechatchila, they get called up Ben Avraham. But if they really insist that they're all embarrassed, they have to be called Ben Chaim, Ben Yankel, Ben Shmerel, so then we don't fight them on it. But it's not lechatchila. So the question is, but the guy brought him up. He's no worse than someone who adopted him. And I didn't get an answer to this. I asked this question, I think, also to Rav Nevenzel. And I think the answer would be that he brought him up when he wasn't Jewish. The problem with what I'm saying is, what would be if the child converted as a child and then he brought him up when he was Jewish? Okay, I don't have a good answer. I don't know. I don't know. Yes.
What about a convert who has an adopted family, like some of the students?
I don't think that counts, because that's an adopted family when one is already mature. The idea is one who brought him up, not one who's his adopted family today. That's this idea to have an adopted parent and grandparent is very nice, but from our perspective, if a person gets an adopted parent at age 16, that's not an adopted parent anymore. He's an adult. It's good. It's very nice. I recommend it. It's good to have a home. It's good to have an adopted parent, but it's not about that Chazal we're talking about. Yes?
Don't we say the same thing about someone who teaches some Torah?
To some degree, yes.
Aspect of that, the person could learn Torah later in life. Maybe if you really learn Torah, that this was like a parental figure, how much instruction you received.
Okay, but we don't say that. You're right. It says, Kol amlamed et ben chaverot Torah kilu yelado. You teach someone's child Torah, it's as though you gave birth to them. But we don't find that application. It's a good point. I don't know. So we have the division of the land. Well, the division of the land, the size of the land that each tribe got was dependent on their size and population, but the value was all equal. So if a tribe was a smaller tribe, they got a smaller territory of higher value. So the land of Israel also had different value. Jerusalem was more expensive than the Golan. This was the case in the days of the temple also. So the division of property was dependent on value, not only dependent on population. We move forward. The daughters of Tzlafchad come in. Now, Moshe tells them, I know that you guys are supposed to get a portion in the land of Israel. Their question was, our father was the firstborn. Do we get his double portion as well? How did Moshe know that they're supposed to get a portion in the land of Israel? How did he know that daughters inherit their father when there are no sons, so they get the inheritance? So Moshe knew that because of the story of Sarah, the daughter of Asher. She had her inheritance from her biological father. And then, even though she was called Asher's daughter, but she had her biological father who had no kids but her, so she got all of his inheritance, and that's how Moshe knew that daughters get an inheritance. What Moshe did not know was, do girls get their father's double portion? A firstborn gets a double portion, do girls get that as well? So Chazal tell us the way it worked was they came to the court. The court bumped it up to higher court until it went up to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe saw all the courts coming to him to ask him the question. So he said, if everyone's honoring me, I should show the honor to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So instead of answering them, he said, let's ask God. All the rabbis had come to him and said, we all don't know. Moshe, you teach us. So Moshe said, well, you don't know. Let's ask God. And we have an idea of this concept. The Sfardim do anytime they make Kiddush, right? The guy is about to make Kiddush. He's about to say Borei Pri Hagafen. He says, Birshut, Morai V'Rabotai, all of you have given me permission to make the blessing on your behalf. And the Halacha says that who do you appoint to make a blessing on behalf of everyone? The top guy. So he's saying, you all gave me permission. I thank you all for permission. They answer Shemayim. It's not us who give you permission. Heaven should give you permission. It's as though he's showing them the honor. All of you give me permission. They say, don't give us the honor. Give heaven the honor. So that's like this concept. We can't take questions now because we have 3 minutes left. Let's try to finish the parasha. Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to see the land of Israel. Chazal tell us one's vision affects things. This is the idea of Ayin Tova. When we could look at something with a good eye, it affects what we see. So Moshe asks the Ribbon Shalom, who should be the next leader? This is a very important concept. Many people fall on this concept. They build great things in their lifetime, and they do not prepare a continuation. It could be for a business, it could be for an institution. Many people do not prepare the continuation of what they're building. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't want your sheep to be like sheep without a shepherd. Chazal tell us, Moshe asked this question right after Hashem tells him about how children inherit their parents. Moshe's hope is that God will give it to his children. And what does Hashem say?
Nope.
Yehoshua ben Nun was so faithful to you all these years. He was studying by you all these years. He's going to lead the people of Israel. So Moshe gives it to him with a full heart, even though he had really wanted his own kids to have that. So here we have a few concepts. Number one, Chazal tells, why did Yehoshua merit to be the next leader? Because every day at the end of the learning, he would set up the chairs. A leader, the continuation is the one who has the foresight for tomorrow. Many people know how to deal for today. You want to be a leader, you have to be able to see for tomorrow. You have to set up the chairs for tomorrow. A leader cares. He doesn't say, no one else did it. What do you want from me? Everyone could have set up their own chair. Why do I have to set up the chairs? A leader is one who puts his head to the task, and he doesn't start looking for who else is responsible for it. It has to get done. Let's get it done. Yehoshua ben Nun has been faithful for 40 years, making sure to get the tradition accurately correct. He's the one that's fit to lead the Jewish people next. So Yehoshua, Chazal say, was like the moon, the reflection of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Hashem tells him, make it clear to the Jewish people. Take him in front of the Kohen Gadol, Elazar, and in front of everyone, they'll see that you've appointed him as the next leader. That's another area of weakness. Very often, people don't leave things clearly before they pass away. I have a good friend of mine who's reached an older age, and I begged him, I said, please, organize your will. He said, what's the big deal? I said, you don't want fights. How many families have been destroyed because things weren't clear when the parents passed away? So he looks at me and he says, Rabbi, you're supposed to have a good eye in life. I said, you're supposed to be realistic in life. He said, yeah, a good eye, but be realistic. He said, don't you think people are kind? I said, I think people are kind, and I think you should not count on people's kindness. You have to be prepared. You never know. All it takes is one rotten apple. Only one person is going to try to outwit the other ones. And it won't be one of your kids. It'll be one of your kids' spouses. Okay? Your kids are all tzaddikim. But all it takes is a child's spouse who says, just get this and just get that. And the spirit changes and fights can erupt. Moshe Rabbeinu makes sure to avoid fights. There's tremendous clarity. He's going to take Yehoshua in front of everyone and make it very clear that Yehoshua is the next leader. There's no room to argue and fight. And very often that's a part of greatness, the ability to set up the future so that when a person dies, there aren't fights afterwards about where the leadership lies. Hashem tells him, put one hand on Yehoshua. And what Moshe does is he puts two hands on him. Chazal say, we learn from Moshe that a healthy teacher and a healthy parent wants their disciple and their child to be better than them. Parents will sometimes say, I'm this observant, you should be that observant. Why do you need to be more than me? That's a sick parent. A parent that's healthy wants his child to be more than them.
Elisha and Elio.
Elio gives Elisha double. And Chazal, I know a parent who tells his kids, I am your minimum, not your maximum. Don't be less than me, but of course you should be more than me. A parent shouldn't be bothered if their child is more pious, more learned, more observant than them. That's a good thing. Chazal say, you see, Moshe is supposed to appoint Yehoshua. Instead of placing one hand the way God told him, he places both his hands. He gives him his full blessing. And this brings us to Chamishi, to the sacrifices, which we will discuss in short, Bezrat Hashem, on Thursday night.